When you buy Kroger brand products, you feel like you're winning. That's because they offer proven quality at lower than low prices. In fact, we guarantee that you and your family will love how Kroger brand products taste, or you get your money back. So next time you're shopping for the family, look for delicious Kroger brand products, because they'll make you all feel like you're winning. Shop now, in-store, or online. Kroger, fresh for everyone.
Let's clear out winter and clean up the lawn with Spring Black Friday savings at the Home Depot. Right now, get the Ryobi One Plus leaf blower for just $89 and make your lawn work easier with a powerful 90 miles an hour of clearing power. And with convenient online shopping, you can order on the app, pick up in store, and get outside sooner. Get your yard spring ready with the Ryobi One Plus leaf blower, now just $89 during Spring Black Friday at the Home Depot. How doers get more done.
Get in zone, AutoZone.
Welcome to AutoZone. What are you working on today?
I got to change the oil in my car.
Right now, get 5 quarts of Pennzoil Platinum Full Synthetic with an STP Extended Life Oil Filter for only $36.99.
Get in zone.
What do I do with my old oil?
We can recycle your used oil for free.
Get in zone.
And do you have oil for my old work truck?
You can find the right high mileage oil to help it go farther right here at AutoZone.
Get in zone, AutoZone.
Restrictions apply.
Hello everyone, and welcome to another December episode of our DNA podcast. It's been fun times having Sir Andy Murray just a couple days ago, and today is no exception, having another amazing guest. I was super excited to talk to this incredibly smart and funny person at the same time, someone I still actually consider a player for some reason, I guess because we were on the tour around the same time. We were neighbors and practicing in the same club in Monte Carlo for years, and we have actually retired at the same age as well. So here he is for you, the one and only Ivo Ljubičić, who obviously is working with the one and only Roger Federer.
All right, well, Ivo, thank you so much for your time. We have not seen you for a very long time. Do you miss the tour? Do you miss the traveling? How have you been?
I've been hiding in the suburbs. I mean, I do miss the real tour. Let's call it that. I miss the but you know, I didn't have a chance really to even experience this current tour, you know, the COVID tour, because Roger was out obviously, and you know, even if I wanted to visit the tournaments, it was impossible. And I wanted to go to Rome, I wanted to go to Paris, but it was just not possible because the players, they had their entourage, you know, quite close, so it was not possible. So yeah, I haven't seen these kind of tournaments live. I watched it on TV. You know, it felt like kind of, you know, not the real thing. You know, in terms of emotions. But you know, the guys and girls played. You know, and it's good. We had some kind of tour, which was at some point it really didn't look good at all.
Yeah, you're right. You did not miss too much as far as some kind of atmosphere goes, but it was good to have tennis back live on. So where am I catching you these days and what you've been up to?
Well, I'm in Monte Carlo. I'm home. You know, I've been here since, more than 20 years now. So I'm home. You know, I have quite a bit of things going on, and I have this new management group that I started in beginning of the year. The timing was rough, you know, but we had a good success. We hired a few people. We are trying to grow. So it's been busy, you know, and I spent a few weeks with Roger as well. He's on his way back. So kids, you know, always take time, and, you know, I love spending time with them. So, yeah, I mean, although I'm not traveling as much as I used to, it's busy. So I like it busy.
I think we are very similar, that as soon as we retired, we'd like to keep busy with other things, just like you mentioned. From everything that you do and you've done after your tennis, what has been the most challenging? Is it the coaching, the TV, now your management company?
Challenging. I mean, it's a tough way to call it, or, you know, challenging. Everything is challenging. I mean, you know, to improve Roger, it's a challenge, you know, to you know, start a new business that you know, I didn't go to school, you know, in order for the management, but I you know, with the years and with the people that you surround yourself, you're able to do it. Yeah, TV, I definitely didn't go to school to do that, but I enjoyed every single part of it, you know, everything that it has to do with tennis, with sports, I enjoy it, you know. And also back in the days when I was playing, you know, I was a player council president, I was a board member, I always wanted to know more about our sport, that's the base, the tennis, and then the sports in general.
How did you find the balance when you retire? And I think maybe this could be useful for someone that's following us, you know, just about to finish their first career in the next couple of years. How do you find the balance between, yes, we have done amazing things on the court that open up the door, but at the same time to have that humbleness that whatever we start, we are starting from the scratch, even though
yes,
in the same sport.
Yes. No, but I never felt like I was retiring when I stopped playing. You know, I felt like, okay, this is done. I'm gonna do something else now. You know, I'm off. I'm gonna just enjoy my time. And for me, it was just another step to do something else. And to be honest, 3 years before retiring, I worked with a company that prepares athletes for the retirements, and this was one of my motivations of to start this sports group. I call it sports group because it's really not just management. The management is one of the things that we do, but it's a sports group that we have a lot of different people in the group that help athletes for whatever they need. And one of my motivations was this, with this company that I used and I worked with last 3 years of my career that prepares athletes for the next career, you know, because it is the tennis. I mean, you know what I will talk about, but for tennis player, you go, you practice, you go on court, you work, you go on the match, you win, and you make money, right? So you have instant result of your work in the financial kind of sense, you know. Yep. Then everything else is just slower. Whatever you do after is just a lot slower. You build things much slower. Then those things are also much more solid, and they last for longer. But it was a big adjustment, probably the biggest adjustment for the tennis player. I think it's general in the sport that you open 100 doors and two of those doors actually give you something. You know, in tennis or in the sport, you don't have that. You open the doors of the tennis court, you go in, you win, or you don't. There are no other doors. And this is where the business is. It's just way different, and it took me a time to adjust to it.
I'm so glad you are bringing this up, because I feel like it's so important, like you said, to start preparing for that while you're playing, while you're doing the sports. Because to me, sometimes, and it happened to my case too, looking back, that I feel like I played almost for a year, 2 years too long, because I was a little bit scared to let go, not knowing what was coming. But like you did yourself as well, there was that preparation that, okay, you know, we've got the brain, we've got the work ethic, so pretty much whatever you do,
yes, absolutely,
it's gonna be okay.
Yeah. But like you said, well, I mean, as long as you don't have, honestly, I mean, economical need right away, you know, if you can afford to invest time into, you know, learning and building up something, it's much better. And this obviously then depends of how successful your tennis career was, you know, if you have some backup, you know. But you're right, you know, if you put the work in and you try to understand, and you're humble, because this is also very important to understand that you are not starting from where your tennis career stopped. You're starting from the beginning. And I was lucky, really, because I really, really think I stopped in the perfect moment, you know. And I never looked back like, oh, was it too soon or was it too late? It was just perfect, you know. And I took a month off, you know. I had a good summer, that summer 2012, but I was ready to go. Like I retired in Dubai. Actually, I decided not to play anymore. I played one last event in Monte Carlo in April. And then I went to Roland Garros as a tourist. And you know, and everybody was like, what are you doing here? I said, what do you mean, what am I doing here? Like I said, I just love this place. And I know that I will be doing something in the sport. It's just that I'm figuring it out, you know. So I'm not running away, and I can't wait to run away from this madness. You know, it was something that I enjoyed immensely.
It's so true. I said that in my actually retirement statement, that I'm retiring from the professional part, but we cannot say bye to something we love. It's our DNA, it's in our heart, and it's going to be always part of our life one way or the other.
Yeah, but I think one part is that the young players, you know, they will listen to us and they will say, what they're talking about. because you start loving the sport later. You know, a lot of kids start playing because they like it, and then there is a period where it becomes a work, and maybe for some, maybe too soon as well. But it becomes, a lot. You know, there's a lot of pressure. There is a lot of negative also parts of what you do. But then by the end of your career, you go back to loving it. So this is where maybe a lot of players, especially younger ones, they will struggle to understand that part. Why everybody who retires from playing and do something else, they talk about the love for the sport. Because you, with the time, you get to understand what it actually really means, the sport, to you and to your family and everybody around you.
Yeah, absolutely. I think the appreciation is at the beginning. Then, like you said, there is the work part, and then there is a even bigger appreciation afterwards. And I think one of the biggest adjustments as well is to understand that, you know, in tennis, you have constant results. You do well, you win. You lose, you do bad, you lose. Where whatever we do now, there is no such feedback right away, like in TV.
Yeah,
like
that's true.
With your business, it's like, okay, am I doing right or wrong? Like, it's more about self-adjustment, I guess.
Yes, well, trust the process also. We then, you know, again, we learned from our tennis or our sports, you know, where you don't know, you hire a new coach. You don't know if he's good or bad. You know, on the paper, the CV looks good. It, you know, for whatever reason, it sounds like a good idea, but you actually don't know. And you have to invest time, you know, and trust the process that it will actually pay off. In the business, it's the same. It's just as I said, it's just it takes a much longer to actually see the results.
Yeah, it's so true. Since, you know, the podcast is called The Real DNA, I want to talk to you about that a little bit. What, as a person, you appreciate the most about yourself and the others as far as the real values of life goes?
Oh my God, that's a tough one. That's I really don't like to talk about my... I can tell about what I love about others. You know, it's really to be open and honest and really... Like, I hate games, you know, I hate backstabbing and these things. It's of course that, you know, you can say, so what are you doing in the management world, you know? So, but that's exactly what I wanted to bring, you know, just the straight, open, collaboration with the players, you know, just honestly, yes, open conversations, open connection, right? And then, you know, the results can be there, cannot be there. This part, sometimes you just can't control. But for me, it's this being open. It's really, really important. And it's not easy. I mean, it's almost easier as a player to be open. In the business world, you have to sometimes hide your cards, but that doesn't mean that you need to lie or be dishonest, you know, not at all. So this is something that I have seen around sports world, not so much in tennis. Honestly, I'm really proud and happy about in the environment around tennis. There are really not many, you know, bad people. You know, it's there are those businessmen who are harder and they're gonna do maybe that extra step, maybe more than others. But I think, I mean, I'm not sure if you will agree, but I think it is a somewhat smaller world. You know, it's quite pleasant. You know, that there are no, I'm happy that I can walk into the player lounge and look everybody in the face and say hi and have a coffee with, you know, no matter, you know, what, you know, is it another player or another coach of another player or agent of another player or whatever that is, you know, and this for me, it's very, very important.
Well, you've been very mild there with yourself, because I think, like you said, towards the end, that's the biggest quality that you've ever had, that you could pretty much go anywhere. And I think all the players will want to hug you and appreciate the goodness that you brought everywhere you went. And that's just my own personal experience. So
yeah, no, thanks. Thanks. But, you know, I was maybe it comes also from the days when I was representing all the players, you know, in the council and in the board. And I really tried to help And I see now we have political battles, and we will always have them. You know, it's not something new. You know, Novak now, we try to kind of make a step further. And, you know, we all tried it. We all been there. You know, so it's I think the players and the people in tennis, they kind of saw that. And one of the nicest, maybe the nicest moment in my career actually happened after I retired that day. It was the day after in Monte Carlo. You know that in Monte Carlo there is this player party where it's kind of closed, where only the players can.
I only heard about it, but I've never been. But I heard amazing things.
Well, it's a special place and special moment for players only, and they are very close teams. But now it's different with the mobile phones and things. Back in the days, it was even wilder. But anyway, so. It was when I retired, the day after we had this dinner, this party, and I went on stage to do a part in this acting, and then I got the standing ovation from everybody, basically, for my career. That was, I still have chills when I think about it. It was something that I was probably the most proud of all my tennis career, you know, just to see that players, because for so many years, I did so much and I tried to do as much as I could to help, you know, the players getting a bigger stake in the game and being heard. But you don't actually know if it's appreciated. You don't know if it's heard, if it's seen, you know, and that moment gave me a lot, really. And it helped me, you know, also gain confidence and do other things after my career.
Well, talking about proud moments in your career, there is one that actually happened right here where I am at the moment in Bratislava. And there was... winning the Davis Cup, how special was it? And also, what is it in the air or the water you guys drink that you have so many incredible players coming literally from, you know, this little place in the world, just like it is for us?
Yeah, well, it is a special place. I mean, it was a few days ago, it was a 15 years anniversary, actually, and I couldn't believe it. It's 15 years. It's so much that it was incredible. I mean, all that year, the entire those two couple, I mean, 2005, 2006, and a part of 2007 was like one big blur for me, because all of a sudden I started to win everything. I mean, I could, obviously, other than Rafa and Roger, that it was, you know, the doors were shut over there. But I reached number three in the world. I won the Davis Cup. I won so many events. I played the finals. Things just started to happen, and it happened when I was 26, 27, you know, so it didn't happen at the beginning of my career where you think like, okay, this is somewhat normal, I'm good. It happened kind of later, so I got to appreciate it maybe even more. But the Davis Cup was the first round we played in US against Agassi, Roddick and Bryan Brothers, which, you know, we thought, okay, that's done. But we managed to win that one. And then all of a sudden we started believing that we can actually go all the way. And Slovakia beat Argentina and also other big teams. So it was the first ever, and I think probably by now, the only final of two unseeded teams. And it was crazy. We won the last match at 2-all. Ancic beat Martinjak. And I don't remember much after the match. I just remember us going back the day after. We went back to Croatia, and there was, I don't know now how much, but about like 50,000 people waiting for us at the main square. That was crazy. And this is one of the regrets I have, is that we did not celebrate that title enough or properly, actually, because we came back to Croatia, we had this welcoming, and then everybody just kind of went home, you know. Mm-hmm. So this is a small regret I have.
What is it about Davis Cup or Fed Cup? Because I don't know how it is for you, but for me, winning Fed Cup was definitely the highlight of my career, because it was for everyone at home. What is it that we feel like this about?
I don't know. I mean, it is, you feel like you're playing for the country, you know, you play for the people, you don't play it for yourself, because you cannot win it by yourself. So you just feel like also the media and everybody, it's more behind you, you know, it feels like people almost care, not almost, but they do care more if you win when you're representing the country than when you win just representing yourself. So this is something that I struggled at the beginning of my career, you know, with this pressure. It was just different, and I didn't understand it was different, you know. But later I figured it out, and I used this pressure, call it pressure, but the crowd also in my advantage. But it took time. It was not automatic.
I feel like we could just talk about your career for another 3 hours, but I know you don't have as much time. So I want to go to a question that I'm dying to actually ask myself. What did you think when Roger called you up to ask you to coach him? I would literally, I think, freak out, start to run, drop my phone. I don't know. How did you feel, and how long did it take you to actually commit to it?
Oh, no, no, it took me 2 seconds. I mean, it's not, but you know, for me, it was of course, I mean, you say yes. It's not a question of yes or not, but for me, it was important to understand also what his goals were and what was his rationale, what he's thinking, because we were friends and we are still friends, of course, but we were close friends, you know, even before so, you know, and, but we never really talked about tennis as much, you know. So I knew everything about him, but I didn't know specifically the tennis part, you know, what his expectations are, what his beliefs are. And for me, you know, I just wanted to make sure that we have the same, same goals, you know. And I always felt like he underperformed, you know, those few years between 2010 not underperformed, but the results. He deserves more. He deserves better, you know. And I wanted to try to help to bring those Grand Slams back. And you know, we were lucky enough to be able to, I mean, win three actually, which was amazing at the time. You know, when you don't win, you feel like it's almost impossible. But then, you know, then they kept coming one after another. It was crazy.
Was it? I wouldn't use the word intimidating, because, like you said, you guys known each other for so long. But having that first practice session. You know, we are talking about the greatest in the game. Like, what do you go and say? Okay, well, bend your knees a little bit more, or use the wrist. I mean, where do you?
It was one of the.
No.
No, but I have to say that Roger helped me a lot. I mean, he knows that, you know, I mean, you know him also quite well. You know, he's very humble and very easygoing. So he knows that it would be for sure a little bit awkward first practice or first two practices, but he made sure that it wasn't. So it was not a problem at all. We were in Dubai, and you know, the weather was nice, everything was nice, and we had time, you know, because yeah, then we had a month basically of preparation for the new season. So it was quite easy, you know. The bigger problem is that how do you improve that machine, you know? That's a bigger problem, you know. But yeah, you just take day by day, and you know, you just say what you think as open as you can.
Yeah, it's that honesty that you mentioned earlier. Is that something that surprised you, that you obviously, like you said, we know each other for so long, but you know, when you started to work with him, it's like, wow, okay, I didn't expect that in a good or bad way.
No, because we used to spend a lot of time together. Families, you know, are very close, even more so, you know, so it would be shocking that there was something surprising there, you know, so no, not really. I mean, it was quite smooth, you know, and of course, that the, you know, first Australian Open, it was, you know, the first tournament he played, he lost in the final to Raonic in Brisbane, which was awkward because I coached Raonic before him, of course. And then after Australian Open, he got injured, that first surgery that he had. So it was rocky start, you know, but we picked it up later. It was, you know, it was, it just took time to get going. And maybe also that injury gave us also time to spend more time on the court together and get to know each other a bit more.
Ivo, we have to also take some of the questions from the fans. This is actually the first question. I'm going to follow what I wrote down because I just kept chatting to you. And I thought it was a very interesting question. This is more on a coaching in general. How much do you think coach should be involved with the player off court in a normal life? You know, how, because it's important to know, you know, what the player goes through, but at the same time to let him or her keep that space.
Well, I think it has to depend on the player, you know. Also, I think female and male, it's also a bit different. I mean, I never coached a girl. I would think that maybe, I mean, you can help us a bit more here, but I feel like it's a bit more difficult not to know anything on the female side, because, but I may be wrong, I'm just guessing. On the men's side, you know, the more mature the player is, the less you need to be involved, you know. But again, I think the coaching, it's not just the time spent on court. It's also the dinners, the car trips, the flights together, and you know, there's so many topics that you can touch, because it's not, you know, hit the backhand like this and then all of a sudden you make a player. You know, it's a mindset, it's the way of thinking, way of living, way of making decisions and all of that. So coaching is it's not just shots and things like this. So I feel like it's almost inevitable that there is some way of some sort of interaction between, you know, what's happening outside and on the court.
Yeah, I think just to follow that on the woman's story, you were totally right. I think actually most of the work gets done off the court, because with the girls, it's always about the emotions and it's mental. And when I had that good connection outside of the court and I was happy with my, I think in a way guys are able to maybe cut that out when they get on the court, where the girls seems like, at least in my case, it was like I couldn't really divide my personal life and then my tennis life, where
maybe bringing the whole package on the court.
Pretty much, you know, sometimes tough to run with with a heavy bag. So I think that's where the coach has to make sure that at least most of the bag stays outside of the court. And I think that's why, in a way, the woman's coaching is more, I guess, psychology than anything else.
But yeah, no. But you know, I also, especially on with the more experienced players, you know, I really don't like when I hear commentators, you know, I don't know, somebody starts working with a guy and then after like 3 weeks, it's you can see because of this backhand, you can see the work of the coach. It's not really like that, you know. And most of the times, or if ever, you can't really know, you know, the work, because the guys, female or male, it doesn't really matter. You don't really change, like, visibly the way you hit the ball, or sometimes not even the way you play. You know, it's a lot deeper inside. It's a lot more than that. It's a conviction. It's a confidence. There are so many other things that the coach can bring to the players that are really not, you know, maybe visible to the audience. And this is very difficult to understand sometimes. And rightly so, coaches are, you know, or the players are not, you know, crazy to talk about it openly, because this is something that happens, you know, between the player and the coach.
Yeah, it's always such a, I don't know, I found it very difficult, like you said, when we got those questions, you know, about, It's almost
what did he bring him?
Yeah, made relationship that you don't want to be sharing with, you know, with the public, with the other players, because it's what makes you strong at the end of the day. So what is helping you now as a coach that as a player you realize, like, okay, if I ever coach, I'm never ever gonna do that? Or what was annoying you when you had a coach? I'm sure you had a great relationship that you tried to avoid. For example, me, it was like, when someone told me during the match, like, fight, I'm like, well, I'm fighting, like, that's why I'm here. So I would
Well, there are two things. Yeah, when I was playing, there were two things that kind of got to my nerves. One, it's regarding my wife, mostly, because she would cheer me up when I lose a point, and I don't need that. You know, I need like support when things are going well. I know it sounds weird, but
nothing sounds weird when you're a player.
Yeah, no, exactly. So like, I if things are bad, I know I have to fight, and it's like I have that. You know, I'm gonna try to dig out of this, you know, by myself. I'm fine. You know, I don't need your mercy. Or I have to say your
yes, I know what you mean.
Feeling sorry for me, you know, like yes. Something like this. That's one thing. And the second thing that I, like, when I would finish the match, doesn't matter if I win or lose, I needed time for myself. Like, I needed 10, 15 minutes just not talk to anybody, not to hear anybody. And, you know, my coach, Ricardo Piatti, he struggles with not talking, you know, so he would storm in and, you know, and he gets excited, especially when I would play good matches, you know. Yeah, and then, you know, this was, I said, Ricardo, just please, just, you know that we're working together for 15 years. Just give me 5 minutes, just 5 minutes, you know, and he would be so excited that he just couldn't control himself. So I tried to, you know, when I would, you know, I coached Miloš and Roger, and, you know, what, you know, I don't know what the player wants, you know, does he want to talk right after or, you know, want to sleep over? And because they are two different conversations. If you speak right after the match, you analyze also emotions because you're very emotional after the match. But if you speak the day after, you talk about tactical, technical, whatever, it's strategy, you know, it's more a cold kind of conversation, you know. So I always preferred, as a player, I preferred colder conversations, you know. But some players just, you know, prefer to know right away because this is my feeling that I'm bringing out from the court. So, yeah, I want to talk now. So it depends. But as a coach, I would not accept, you know, players talking bad to me in the camp. I would just not get, you know, I would just literally walk off the right. For me, this is something that I am most disgusted from this younger generation, because for me, it's such a lack of respect and such a bad behavior that, you know, with the older guys, you talk about it. And it was like, how did we even get here? How this became normal? Because, you know, like back in the days, you respect the coach. You can't do this. Like, it's not possible. You know, so this is something that I'm just like, this is a no-go. This is not going to happen. You know, so luckily, you know, with Miloš, you know, he was able, he had, you know, this rough and tension moment, but he never talked bad to me. And Roger, obviously not, you know, but this is something that I would not, I would just not be able to handle.
Yeah, you're so right about the time when to talk to the player after the match. And I was the same at the beginning, where I wanted to know everything right away. And then when I worked with Carlos Rodriguez, he always wanted to, the earliest to discuss was in the evening, in the hotel, or the next morning. And then I always found such a more mature conversation. So I think, yeah, a little bit more time definitely helped.
But you have, there is a danger that you will forget a few things that you maybe you would have said right away. So there is pros and cons on both sides.
Yeah. Ivo, I know you are super busy. So just last two questions. First of all, you retired after 14 years on the tour, if I'm correct. I retired after 19, and I think for both of us, that was very long time in that time.
Yes. Yeah.
What is
absolutely
it that Roger, Rafa, Novak, Andy, why are they able to play so much longer? What is it that they know we didn't know? Is it the recovery, the physios, or why do you think in sports in general, because it's not just tennis, that the age just gets shifts a little bit more?
Well, first of all, I would return the question, is that why not? Like, I feel like maybe we could have played longer if we thought that it was possible. You know, like, it was almost normal to retire at 33, 34 when I retired. You know, it was just not, I think it's just that guys just kind of try to push and then they realize they actually can, you know, because I cannot say, I'm 41 now and I'm, you know, obviously out of shape, but I feel like if I would go back to practice, I would be competitive somewhat. So definitely, of course, we have nutrition. We know more about, you know, what we eat, what we drink. We know more about, on the fitness side, definitely there's more information as what not to do. You know, this is very important. Tennis-wise, we never really stopped because we didn't like to play tennis, you know. So, and obviously, I mean, there is also financial part where the prize money and the earnings now are so high that, you know, you just keep, it's just kind of more logical to play longer. You know, when I retired, I mean, honestly, I can say that I was not making any money, you know. So for me, playing, not playing, it didn't make any financial difference, you know, traveling with two kids, a nanny, because you have to have one if you have two kids, and the coach and the physio and myself, it was just so much money, and so there was not even that there. You know, now it's a bit different because people maybe don't realize what happened in tennis last 10 years, you know, on the financial side. You know, there was really a huge shift, and I'm all for that. The players are keep pushing and they want more because they deserve a lot more than they're getting. But also, there was a massive change, you know, and then the guys, if you look at the prize money rankings, you know, in 2010, maybe, now I'm shooting, I don't know this information, but maybe number 12 in the world was making a million, now number 50 makes a million, you know, so there's a lot more people who make more money. It is better tour, the tours are healthier. So the players just keep playing. And again, I'll come back to the first point, which I think is the most important one. Why not? You know, I think that the guys are showing, the Rogers and Rafas of the world are showing everybody it can be done. Yeah. So they just go for it.
It's such a good point. So I think doing the math, we retired around the same time, 34. And that felt like, okay, this is the right time. Like, I should not be playing any longer because it's embarrassing. Where now it's like...
Also that.
Right?
Yes.
It was like, no. This is like, I cannot look at my age. And like you said, like, I'm sure if we train now, you know, physically we were fine. We love the sport, but it's like, it's not supposed to be any longer than this. It's like, now our time is done. And talking about time, the very last question, please, can you confirm my theory that doing TV is harder than playing? Because no one wants to believe me that how long the hours can be and how tough it is.
There are some, I mean, I had fun. I have to say, I was doing more the studios pre and post matches, you know, than actually commentating. Commentating matches can be long, you know, because best of five sometimes, you know, there are some matches that you're really trying to squeeze last drop out of that lemon. It's not simple. I mean, I know what you're talking about. Yeah, and you know, and if you say something wrong, you know it's going to be on Twitter, Facebook, in the papers, and you have 4 hours of talking, and you have to be really careful. So it's not simple at all.
Well, Ivo, let's finish on this great note. I feel like we could talk for another 2 hours, but you're doing great things.
We can do the second part in the future.
Oh, wow. Why not? Okay. Well, I really appreciate it, and I would love to take you on that sometime in the future.
No worries.
And good luck with, first of all, now the young players that you are working with at the moment, and let's hope we can see you on the tour very soon with Roger as well, and obviously, very Merry Christmas.
Thank you for having me. All the best, guys.
Thanks, Lubo.
I hope you have enjoyed today's episode and getting to know my guest a bit better. If you feel like it, do subscribe to us so you don't miss any of the action. Also, let me know your comments or suggestions on my social media channels, and have a lovely rest of your day. Bye!
You're a growing business, which means you need every spare hour you can find. That's why the most successful growing businesses are working together in Slack. Slack is where work happens, with all your people, data, and information in one AI-powered place. Start a call instantly in huddles and ditch cumbersome calendar invites. Or build an automation with Workflow Builder to take routine tasks off your plate. No coding required. Grow your business in Slack. Visit slack.com to get started.
Ready? Okay. Give me a beach.
Beach!
Give me great food.
Tacos!
Give me adventure.
Hiking!
Give me a date night.
Sunset cruise!
Give me some smiles.
Cheese!
Give me more beaches.
Beaches!
What's that spell?
San Diego!
If you're happy and you know it, San Diego is the place to show it. Book your trip at sandiego.org. Funded in part with the City of San Diego Tourism Marketing District Assessment Funds.
Refinancing your car at Kemba Financial Credit Union can get you quick access to cash to help manage high-rate debts and expenses. Get up to $500 next day cash back, plus no payments for 90 days, and take cash equity out. Make your car work for you and drive away with extra cash. Apply at Kemba.org. Restrictions apply. Offer ends April 30th, 2024. Federally insured by NCUA.